It's episode 5031 of the Peer Advantage Podcast. Welcome inside the Yale Studio. My name is Randy Kentrell, your host here. You can find show notes for today's episode, and I would encourage you to do that because there's a couple of photographs that I think you might be interested to see by going to growgreat.com. Just plug in the number 5031 in the search widget on the sidebar there, and it'll take you right to it. Recently, my wife and I celebrated our 40th wedding anniversary, and we had been planning this trip to Natchitoches, Louisiana. Natchitoches is around Alexandria, kind of sort of in the middle of the state, more in the northern than the southern part. It is the oldest city in the Louisiana Purchase, going back to the early 1700s, I think 1714. And it's where Creole began. And for those of you that don't know, I'm a southern boy. Well, Oklahoma, Texas, and Louisiana. Creole is really a hodgepodge and was the gumbo mix, if you please, in human terms, of Africans, the Indians, which here around Natchitoches were the Caddo Indians, the French, and the Spanish. Melrose Plantation is located just outside of Natchitoches, Louisiana, and my wife and I took a tour of this palatial estate. Construction on the main house began in 1832. John Hampton Henry and Cammie Garrett Henry, they bought the property from their heirs in 1899. Now, the point of all this is not Louisiana history. The point of this are some lessons that we can learn from an early 1900s patron. Cammie lost her husband, John Henry. He died suddenly in 1918. And so she led the plantation into one of its most glorious periods. She was a committed preservationist, and she was a patron to the arts, especially literature. During a period known as the Southern Renaissance, she hosted a variety of artists who were invited or allowed to stay in quarters behind the big house. She only had two conditions. One, they had to work on their craft. B, they had to join her for supper each evening where the artists would all report on the work that they had accomplished that day. Unless you think that she was just merely an observing patron, she was prolific in her own craft. Her craft, well, it involved sewing. She made quilts, she made tablecloths, she made clothing. She would frequently have all the guests at the table, after the meal was over, sign this white cloth tablecloth in pen. And she would embroider over it later to preserve it. In fact, many of her intricate sewing projects remain to this very day, including a number of those embroidered tablecloths. And Miss Cammie, well, she would report on her projects along with all the other artists. Those familiar with the Civil War and post-Civil War South will likely know the name Clementine Hunter. Now, Miss Clementine was employed by Cammie as her cook. And Clementine's family went back to slavery. Her family moved to the Melrose Plantation from another plantation where she was born, where they were sharecroppers in post-Civil War America. She was about 12 years old when the family moved to Melrose, and she worked in the fields. Later, she became a housekeeper, but it was her job as the cook. That's the job that gave her the opportunity that she is most known for, painting. She discovered some discarded paints that had been left behind by one of those artists that had been hosted by Cammie. She didn't have any formal education. She did not know how to read or write. Someone taught her to put her initials on the painting. She did teach herself to paint, though, and she became prolific. In fact, according to the folks there at Melrose, today there are some 6,000 pieces of her work. In the early 1940s, an artist showed up who would chronicle life at Melrose. His name was François Mignon, and he claimed to be from Paris, France. Well, turns out his name was Frank, and he was from Cortland, New York. Okay, well, we don't want to get hung up in the truth, right? We don't want to let that spoil a good story. Well, he arrived at Melrose for a six-week stay. He wanted to take full advantage of Miss Cammie's hospitality to be a grand patron to these artists. She provided them whatever they needed. They just had to meet those two conditions. Well, the six-week stay, it turned into 32 years. Daily, he would journal about life at Melrose, thousands of pages. Now, the problem is, he wasn't Francois Mignon from Paris, France. He was Frank from Cortland, New York. And the journal that he wrote, you know, the problem is he romanticized, even perhaps fantasized about life at Melrose. And historians have had a pretty difficult time separating fact from the fiction in his mind. Cammie died in 1948. But Francois, he continued to live at Melrose until 1970. But you know, without Francois, Melrose may have never been preserved or restored as we have it today. And so he provided a very valuable service outside of the exaggerated daily journals. Over at the Year of the Pier podcast, you can find it by going to yearofthepier.com. Leo Battari and I regularly review our tagline. And the tagline simply is this: who you surround yourself with matters. Cammie began to illustrate that point back in 1918 after her husband's death. So what can we learn? What can we learn from this early 1900s patron? Well, there's plenty to take away. You likely have already connected a few dots yourself. Number one, what we have in common. Cammie hosted artists of all types as a patron. Her two-rule imposition, it might have deterred some, but she was still able to surround herself and the other artists with people pursuing their craft. They were all creative. They were all working on their craft every day. Individually, they spent time alone in their pursuit. These guests of Melrose, enjoying the hospitality, enjoying the support of Cammie, likely got to know one another quite well. Creative people enjoy each other's company. They're interested in what the others are doing. It's the process of being creative that is a tie that binds. Secondly, what we don't have in common. Multiple writers would be hosted at the same time at Melrose, but so would other artisans. It didn't matter if the person was a painter, didn't matter if they were a writer, didn't matter if they were a sculptor, or, like Cammie, a person who used fabric and thread and cloth-based artistry. The what of your pursuit did not matter, but the creation did, and the process. Diverse pursuits, diverse points of view, people who came from different places. Francois was not from Paris. He was from New York. These things likely fueled greater creativity as each artist was seeing and understanding the projects of the others. Now, we don't have any real way of knowing the full impact a painter may have had on a writer, or a writer on the sculptor. Completely different crafts, different pursuits. But value in helping each artist consider, and maybe, just maybe, apply lessons learned by the other guests to their own work. Three, coming together for accountability. Each evening, as the guests made their way to the big house and sat around this large table to enjoy a meal together, Cammie had them inform the rest of the group about their progress that day. And that daily check-in propelled greater output and higher accomplishment, as each guest would certainly feel the positive pressure to have done something productive that day. I mean, the group was waiting to hear the news of progress. How's your project coming along? You certainly wouldn't want to disappoint the group, and you absolutely wouldn't want to disappoint the host. Sharing those experiences of working on their art, it likely brought daily insights on how each of them might apply things they would have never considered on their own. Hearing these others talk about their work had to compel all of them to think about their experience and the framework of what they were working on. It does for you and me today. We've all heard somebody tell us something that they're doing, and it would spark us to say, man, you know, that's a great idea. And I'm rather certain that that happened sitting around Cammie's table. Lastly, everybody is part of the group. Yes, even the host. Cammie wasn't sitting at the head of the table simply grilling each guest about their work. She was doing her own work. And just like the rest of them, she was reporting on her work. And while she was the patron and she was the host, at the table in the discussion, she's part of the group. Her work mattered to her just as much as anybody else. The guests wanted to hear her progress as much as they wanted to hear anybody else's progress because she was part of the group. Her wealth, her status didn't matter. Not as they're reporting their progress. She was an artist, just like the rest of them. Nothing divided the group. The power was in the entire group and what each of them could contribute to the whole. This is an early 1900 example of the peer advantage. Peer advantage goes way back, though, to the beginning of time itself. According to the book of Genesis, Adam and Eve collaborated to do the work that God gave them in the garden. Mostly, God took care of them. He just forbade them to eat of one tree, the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Well, Eve was tempted, and she influenced Adam. There's two people on the planet. You know, one influenced the other, and they both sinned. And so it goes with the people who surround us, right? I mean, they influence us for good or evil. The good news is we can choose. Choosing's hard, though. Choosing is really hard. And as we saw in our review of the book, The Third Opinion, it has to be intentional and purposeful. It's not necessarily best to rely on luck or happenstance or coincidence. Many business leaders do that. Many business leaders rely on organic relationships to provide their inner circle of insight. And that's about as reliable as how it went with us as kids in the neighborhood. If Johnny next door was a hellion and he was bent on trouble, well, he was likely going to get the rest of us in trouble if we foolishly followed him. But if Susie lived next door, and if Susie was well-behaved and a good student, and if Susie had any leadership influence on the group and we followed Susie, well, it's pretty safe bet we were going to stay out of trouble. When I walked through the Melrose Plantation big house and I looked around this room where these nightly suppers were held, it was very easy for me to envision and imagine the conversation of these artists with their host, Cammie. I could imagine how some evenings a few of them may not have walked to the big house as briskly as they did other days, because maybe that day, that particular day, they weren't as productive as they had hoped. And they knew that they would have to divulge today's difficulties to the group. But these were other artists, their peers. I rather suspect there was a tremendous support and encouragement, not harsh judgment. At least I'd like to think so. And given how long some of the artists stayed, I suspect I'm right. Which led me to wonder about the artist who may have bailed out. The artist who may have come to Melrose, yeah, they weren't willing to withstand the rigors of accountability. They weren't willing to push themselves harder to grow, to improve, to transform, and to get better at their craft. Intuition tells me that the ones who stayed benefited, while the cowardly, they likely never discovered their best work. And so it goes with you, with me, with everybody. We can learn and replicate these experiences for our own growth, improvement, and transformation. Or we can cower at the thought of sitting with a group of peers who are committed to nudging us toward higher improvement, people willing to let us serve them the same way. It's been 100 years since Cammy lost her husband in 1918. It's been 100 years since she began her solo efforts to restore and transform the Melrose plantation. But she wasn't alone. She wasn't alone at all. She was surrounded every day with artists who came there to devote themselves to their craft. She was surrounded by artists each evening as she listened to these creative people get together and share what they had done that day, share what they had learned that day, share their experiences of that day. It's a lesson for us all. It's a lesson that we'll only benefit from if we seize the peer advantage, like Cammy did. My name is Randy Cantrell. You can find the website at growgreat.com if you want to learn more about how you could leverage the peer advantage as a small business owner, as a business executive, as a leader. Check out thepeeradvantage.com.